This is the Rich Report, bringing you the richest content across sports, music, and film. And if you thought last night's judging at UFC 247 was chaotic, boy, do I have a story to tell you today, because the Bush clash was utter chaos and ridiculous and just a complete and utter freaking mess. I had Johnny Crane watch with me. He's trying to get back into the sport. Johnny, how are you doing on this beautiful but chaotic Sunday?
I am doing well, and I'll be honest. I mean, we'll get into it a little bit more, but I was quite entertained, to say the least.
Oh, were you now? Were you now?
Well, it depends on how you define entertained.
All right, we're going to start first with Daytona 500 qualifying, because we had a surprise. Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who moves over from Roush Fenway Racing to JTG Daugherty, on the pole for the Daytona 500, as long as he does not have an accident or any mechanical issue during the duels on Thursday. He's on the pole. Alex Bowman will join him on the front row. Johnny, I know you're still trying to get used to the roster and all that, but a guy that really is given mid-tier equipment now sits on the pole for the biggest race of the year. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's great for the sport. I mean, when you think of the casual fans, and if you want to get more casual fans into the sport, the casual people know who Kyle Busch is. The casual people know who Denny Hamlin is. But not many people will know who Stenhouse is. And I think for the middle of the pack, mid-major kind of drivers out there that are using, you know, not the best quality equipment in the world compared to others, I think this is a really good opportunity for not only him to spotlight, but for fans to get a spotlight of a rising upcoming star.
Yeah, I agree. I did not expect Stenhouse to have the run he did, but how I saw it was that for qualifying trim, they said, you know what, let's just run it completely off. Let's make it as light as possible. Let's make it as fast as possible and try to win this pole. And they did that. And now you see Stenhouse on the pole. Other drivers, you know, the really elite ones, you didn't really see, you know, in the top 10. As you saw Hamlin up there. You saw Jimmy Johnson up there as well. Jimmy Johnson's final season. Everybody thought qualifying was going to be rigged today for Jimmy Johnson because it was his final Daytona 500. But now another conspiracy. Having Kroger sponsored Daytona 500 qualifying, you get a Kroger car on the pole. Do you think there's conspiracy with the 500? Because I've heard it for years with qualifying. Oh, it's always rigged for Hendrick Motorsports. The favorite driver always gets the pole. Look, you can see that it's true that the popular driver usually wins the pole, but come on, come on. It's a little far-fetched.
When you look at conspiracy, this isn't really just a NASCAR thing. It's an entire sport thing. Everybody tries to make some sort of correlation between the brand, or if a baseball player wins the home run derby at their home stadium, oh, you know, it's rigged because it's that simple. Even if you wanted to rig up a car to where it'll qualify and it'll get the pole, it's just too difficult to do. There's just too many moving parts. No, it's not a rig job. It's just a coincidence. Okay, there's nothing to see here. It's just, quit looking into it too much. It's a good story, okay? Stenhouse is a mid-major guy. Don't take away the glory and say that it's a conspiracy. It's naive. Come on.
All right, now we got to move to the main topic of the day, the Bush clash. Oh my God. Well, first off, congrats to Justin Haley and Brendan Gaughan, two of the open cars, the non-chartered cars, locking their way into the 500 on speed. The other two spots left for the 500 will come down to Daniel Suarez, Reed Sorensen, JJ Yaley, Chad Fincham, and Timmy Hill, I believe. Those are the five left that can get into the 500 for two spots. Those will happen at the duels on Thursday. But man, this Bush clash, I don't know how to sum it up. It was an utter freaking mess. And you loved it, Johnny. And you loved it. All right, I'll let Johnny talk first because we both have two differing sides of this.
Well, when you look at the race, so it was 75 laps. The first 40-ish laps or so, it was practically just waiting in line. It's like, you know, you see those, you're at a school and you see all the kids walking in a line going to the cafeteria. It was like that for the first 40 laps. For the first 40 laps, relatively uneventful, but then chaos happened. Now, the crashing, how many crashes were there? Three? Four?
There were five.
Four or five? I think from an entertainment standpoint, it was cool. But from a strategic standpoint, it was very, very sloppy. It's a good thing this was not for points, because I don't think any of the drivers would have deserved points at all. I think at the end of the race, there were, what, 6 cars left, and none of them had, were, all of them were damaged, right? Yeah, pretty much every single car was damaged and or totaled. Entertainment from a casual fan perspective, it's great. From a strategic perspective and looking between the lines, it was very, very sloppy. It was very, very rusty for all the drivers, and it was a little bit boneheaded too, especially with the Chase Elliott wreck, in my opinion. But from an entertainment perspective, I can understand why people would like it, but yeah, it's a good thing that this is not for points. Let's just put it like that.
Yeah, so the first 45, 50 laps, we're running single file. When cars want to drop down, a la Denny Hamlin wanted to multiple times, nobody would go with them. Everybody wanted to stay in line, stay in the pack. They don't want to lose a draft, and they don't want to follow the back. The only passing we really saw early on was Martin Truex Jr. had to go back because he had some tape on the grill and was just, the car was going to blow up had he not gotten that tape, that debris off the grill. Then we had, I think, one more pass because Brad was having the same issue. But that was about it. The caution came out, and we went back to single file immediately. We all thought, okay, this is an exhibition race. The goal is to win. You're not racing for points. Look, I get you don't want to destroy your car, because the cars they use in the Busch Clash are their backups, because you don't want to run your primary for the Busch Clash. You want to save that for the 500 and the duels. But at the same time, you're trying to win here. This is for cash only. Now, the Clash in the past used to be a 25-30 lap dash, no pitting, no coming in to get gas. That was about it. You ran to the end, one shootout to the end, and that was it. And it used to be great. But now, recent years, it's gone longer, and now you actually have, we had a fuel mileage race in a race that's supposed to be fun. 75 laps is too long for a Clash. I think we need to cut it to at least 40-45, an entire fuel run. You don't want the cars running out of fuel in a race that's meant to be fun. You don't want to think too much into it. Yes, you still have your spotters go to work. Yes, you're trying to knock off the rust. But at the same time, this should be fun. It should be fun for the drivers. And I don't think many outside of Eric Jones and Denny Hamlin pushing him to the end had a lot of fun today. So we get to the fuel mileage, you know, the field is practically split in half. You have the Chevys and Joey Logano in one pack. Then you have the rest of the Fords and the Toyotas in another. They all pitted separately. Toyotas and Fords came in for fuel while the Chevys didn't. They all thought they can make it on fuel. And then we get our first legit caution, which was Kyle Busch trying to make a pass on Logano. Logano was blocking him in the turn 3. But Denny Hamlin was below Kyle Busch. Kyle Busch didn't have much room. Therefore, Joey Logano ended up getting into him when he was trying to get back in front of him. They crashed. Logano, Kyle Busch, and Brad Keselowski get taken out in that wreck. And which could reignite their rivalry with each other. Because we all know Kyle Busch and Brad have a history. Joey Logano and Kyle Busch also have a history. So that might be reignited and something we see for the rest of Speed Weeks and maybe for the rest of the season. Hopefully, we need those heated rivalries on track. And then, you know, we're like, okay, you know, we got everybody together. The Chevys were going to, nope, the Chevys don't take, oh, the Chevys did come in and get fuel, because that was when that wreck happened. It was like 15 to go. Yeah, 15, that last 20 laps took about 2 hours. Yeah. And then, you know, we thought, okay, we're going to get a fun race now. And then the restart crash. I don't know. I can't explain it. I've never seen something like this since maybe the 02 500 where they wrecked on the restart. But that was like 3 or 4 cars involved in that. Ryan Newman, of all drivers, spins the tires somehow. I forget if it was him being shoved behind from William Byron that made him do it. But both of them spun their tires. Both of them couldn't control their cars. Wreck. Take out 3/4 of the field, and in a very small field at that. There was 15 cars left. There were 16 because Joey Logano was still in the race. They all take each other out. That's about 8 cars that went out. Bowman went out. Byron went out. Truex went out. A whole just, yeah, half of the field that was left practically was out of the race at that point. And yeah, Johnny, just what were your thoughts on just that restart alone? Because you never see wrecks like as big as that happen on a restart. You usually see it when they're up to full speed and they're slicing and dicing across the track. I've rarely seen that happen, ever.
So the two drivers, again, that were spinning the wheels and caused the whole crash, who were they again?
They were Byron and Ryan Newman.
So on Twitter, I was following a lot of the reporters, and from the reporters interviewing the drivers and the pit crew members and such, they were thinking that there's some sort of liquid or debris on the field that I guess was not picked up in the previous crashes. And that would sort of make sense because it seems as if both drivers went out of control at the same time. That sort of makes sense to me that there could be some debris, because you would think if there wasn't debris, the car in front would go out of control and then the car behind, like right after, would correct and try to not get in the crash that's going to inevitably happen with that going on. So it's just, it's really, really bad. It's a lot of rust, I think, too. Especially when you're starting like that, you're all tight-knit together. You know, the drivers haven't really done that, you know, since last season. So, I mean, there is some rust involved. A lot of rust, but I mean, I think there could have been some sort of debris on the field, maybe some liquid. The track was relatively loose with the sun still shining and everything. So, whatever the weather, it was not pretty. And yes, that's an exhibition for you.
So we're like, okay, it can't get any worse than this, right? Oh no, it can. So on the restart, you have Chase Elliott pushing the absolute crap out of Denny Hamlin. Denny Hamlin got loose twice on the backstretch, and then going into turn three, he must have cut a tire at some point. I don't know how, really, unless, you know, something with the pushing and the way his tires were, you know, causing friction when he got loose both those times, if that immediately cut it down. Never seen a tire get cut down without some sort of contact on the side that the tire came down on. But Denny Hamlin wrecks and takes out pretty much everybody else. Hamlin, it was Hamlin, Harvick, Jimmy Johnson, you know, and a whole bunch of other guys were involved as well. Just, and then we're just, I have my hands over my head, just like embarrassed, because, you know, you want to start the season off fun, but you don't want utter chaos. Or you want chaos, but you don't want it in the way that takes out everybody. You only get stuck with two cars at the end. Yes, from a casual standpoint, you can see it as fun. But for, you know, the purest racing fans like myself to, you know, the old heads of NASCAR that complain about everything nowadays, it wasn't very fun to watch.
I think this wreck was the one that really stood out to me the most, because I think it was the most boneheaded out of all the wrecks that happened. I think at this point, I think the driver should have caught the hint that, you know what, this is an exhibition, this is for cash, not points. And when you look at the rest of the field when that crash happened, none of these drivers are going to be cash-strapped, okay? I mean, yes, it's for cash that they didn't have before, but I mean, it's not going to be the end of the world if they don't get it. I thought that they should have played a little more safe at this point, because I'm pretty sure they could have read the room at this point that, you know, it's not the right field condition. There could be some fluid on the track. All these cars are beat up. Let's just save it, and let's move on to win and put this energy towards races when they actually count for championship points and whatnot. I thought that the Elliott move was very boneheaded. I thought that trying to cut inside and then going back, no, cutting outside and then going back inside was really risky. And again, at this point, risky things were happening up at this point, and I don't think it was really worth it, because again, this is only for cash. Come on.
So we go to overtime, and we're talking about eight cars left now. Chase Elliott and Kyle Larson were the only really non-damaged cars left going to overtime. So you know how overtime works now. If you wreck with two to go, we will keep restarting until we finally get to the final lap. And that's exactly what happened. Chase Elliott trying to get too slicey and dicey with Kyle Larson. They end up taking each other out. The last two cars that were left that were still, you know, not damaged, get taken out of the race completely. Chase Elliott just making, you know, boneheaded moves, really trying to find a way. Kyle Larson throwing ridiculous blocks. It was just both guys doing everything wrong, and they were both out, and now we have a red flag situation, and we got cars sitting everywhere. Oh, wait, no, that was during the Hamlin wreck. Never mind. I forgot. This race was like 3 hours long for a race that should have only lasted about an hour. So, yeah, take that for what it's worth. But then we get left with about four cars to the finish, and we finally get a freaking finish. Denny Hamlin with an amazing push of a damaged Eric Jones car. Eric Jones ends up as the winner of the race, but he's got a destroyed front. I believe the results were, I don't know. Denny Hamlin finished sixth, I think, a lap down. I think Clint Bowyer was left in the race. Austin Dillon as well. Austin Dillon was the only one that didn't collect damage, I think, in this entire event. No, but, and he still didn't win because Austin Dillon. Although, you know what? He gets a lot of flack because he's in the three car, and old heads are like, well, the three should be retired from NASCAR because Dale Earnhardt. But come on. It's an iconic number. Why do you think the 43 is not retired? Why do you think the 17 is not retired? The 11 as well, the winningest number in NASCAR history. But yeah, just an utter mess, and I didn't, you know, it was entertaining, but at the same time, I found it to be embarrassing. That's how this made me feel.
I can understand your viewpoint. We'll see what happens next week when there are double the amount of cars. Embarrassing, I could definitely see it from a purist perspective, why you would think that way, but let's give it a little bit of time. Let's see how the drivers do next week when it actually counts, because again, there were no points involved, and maybe that was the reason why they were being really risky. Oh, let's try some new things out. If it doesn't work, we won't try it when the races count. But I mean, yeah, we're all mixing up the crashes here in wrecks. There were so many, and yeah, the final, like, what, 20-ish laps took 2 hours. Yeah, it was a mess.
Yeah, and I get it. We should be, the cars want to get used to the draft, the drivers, because one, knocks out the rust, two, gets you better prepared for the duels and Daytona 500. And we're going to see the same thing on Thursday with the duels. The cars are going to be running single file, I think even more so than what we saw today, because we're not trying to wreck the cars, because you're running your primaries in the duels. But to me, you know, yes, we still have drivers trying to race to get in. Cars will be sent home. Three cars will be sent home this weekend, but it used to be we were sending home 12, 13. I mean, you used to have, you know, somewhere around 53, 55 cars trying to make the 500 for 43 spots. But now, you know, due to, you know, NASCAR losing money because of attendance and ratings going down, we're stuck with 43 cars running for 40 spots. And to me, it's more risk for the drivers that are actually going to be in the 500 than reward for the drivers trying to get in my opinion. Because you get taken out, you lose your primary, you take out 5-6 cars, I now have to go to a backup. Just a lot of money goes down the drain during speed weeks. Look, I love it. I love crashes. Even as a NASCAR fan, they're fun to watch, but at the same time, you have to recognize the human aspect, the financial costs that come with it. There are millions of dollars combined that go out of the drain and out of teams' pockets whenever you see a crash happen. I think we have to keep that in mind. I think that's something that a lot of the casual fans do not keep in mind when that happens.
And this is a lot of money for, you know, the most elite drivers, you know, the ones that are part of teams that have the most money. We're not even talking about the crashes and how it financially affects the mid-tier drivers, because this affects them a lot more, and that's practically their only shot at winning races and trying to collect points with that primary car. So moving forward, you know, hopefully this cleans it up a little bit. Yes, there's a lot of money going down the drain in this race. However, let's see how the drivers react and drive with more experience and with the races actually counting.
Yes, I still think we'll have a great Daytona 500 because this package, when it's 40 cars altogether, we haven't had a clash. It was the old one with the low ride height rules, which the cars could barely stabilize at all. But this one works. Cars are more stable. They're fast as hell. But today was not great to knock off the rust. But hopefully the rust is knocked off and we get some great racing on next Sunday for the 500. That will do it here for us. Thank you for listening. Daytona 500 next Sunday. It's practically Christmas for all NASCAR fans. It's Speed Weeks. Duels Thursday, Trucks Friday, Xfinity Saturday, Cups Sunday. We'll have it all covered for you coming up this week. Johnny, thank you for joining me and watching this with us. We will see you guys Thursday, maybe to talk about the duels, but definitely Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Have previews, recaps for all the races coming up. See you guys then. Have a great rest of your day.